Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Digital Identity Digest. Today, I want to talk about something that I hear a lot from people who are curious about standards work, but never quite take the leap to participate. It's that feeling of, I'm not technical enough. I mean, standards are for engineers, so I'm just going to sit this one out. If that's you, this episode is for you. Because the truth is, standards work is not just for coders. In fact, some of the most important roles and working groups don't involve writing a single line of code. So I'm going to pull the curtain back a little bit on my own experience as a working group chair in a couple standards organizations, and I'll show you what actually matters in the role. I mean, I'm going to cover the skills that make standards work successful, how non-coders can contribute, and how you can build the confidence to jump in. So let me start with a confession. So I chair working groups in organizations like the Internet Engineering Task Force and the World Wide Web Consortium. But if you give me a technical specification to read, understand, implement, totally couldn't do it. I can't code myself out of a wet paper bag. I can read the text of a specification. I don't necessarily understand it. I can track the arguments and understand why a certain design decision was made. But at the end of the day, I don't read specs like implementers do. I'm not the person shipping code at the end of the week, and that's fine. Because being a working group chair isn't about being the ultimate subject matter expert. It's about facilitating the process and helping the group reach decisions, stay on charter, and document its work. Those are very different skills. So let's talk about what a working group chair actually does and, you know, what that job looks like on a good day. As a chair, you're setting the agenda and making sure that the right topics are discussed at the right time. You're being led in that by what the people who are participating want to talk about and the charter that they have agreed to. You're keeping cue in the meeting so people know when it's their turn to speak. You're listening carefully to what's said and how it's said. You're watching for where the room seems to be heading and just testing for consensus. When people disagree, you're making sure that those objections are heard and captured, not swept under the rug. And you're constantly guiding the group back to the work it signed up to do in the first place, because working groups love to drift off charter. That's the job. What the chair does not do is decide the technical design. We don't win arguments. We don't gatekeep contributors. And yeah, having some technical knowledge helps. It makes it easier to spot when a question is drifting or when a proposal needs more review. But being the loudest, most opinionated person in the room, that's a liability for a chair. Don't do that. So this comes to mind as a post for me because of the recent IETF meeting in Madrid. I was sitting in a session, not one that I was chairing, and I was feeling completely inadequate. The chair of that meeting was clearly brilliant. They answered every question instantly. They had deep expertise and could reference years of history off the top of their head. And I'm thinking, I can't do that. I'll never be that good. Now, later I shared that feeling with a friend who's been around standards development since, you know, Gandalf was a baby, which means a very long time. This is someone who has seen it all over the course of decades. And they told me something that stuck with me. They said, that level of subject matter expertise isn't what makes a good chair. The chair's job is to be neutral, to help the group come to consensus. If you're too invested in the outcome, you can't do that job well. And they're absolutely right. So the next day, I'm chairing my own session, and we hit a point in the conversation where things started to circle. And instead of jumping into that debate, you know, my job was to pause, to restate the question we were trying to answer, and then ask for people to actually review the document we were discussing so that we could discuss it further on list rather than to spend too much time in the group itself. It was, we have a question, we have a document, let's make sure we're focused on that come back to that and put it in a forum where we're going to have more time than we do in this space right now. So we left the room with clear decisions and clear owners for action on the next steps. And that's what the job is about. So this is actually why non-coders, people who don't identify as engineers, are so valuable in standards development. There are so many tasks that need to be done that have nothing to do with writing code. For example, turning pain points into crisp user stories, you know, we need this feature because this other thing breaks if we don't. Product managers are amazing at that. Writing readable summaries for product managers, for legal teams and executives, that's an incredible life skill. Triage, you know, this is actually great for junior people who are trying to learn a bit more. Come in and clean up GitHub issues, help label them, close duplicates, and help the chairs line up proposals for meetings. Spotting interoperability gaps, this is great for people who know the problem that they're trying to solve, and in talking to perhaps the people working on the specification, can start to say, hey, but how would this fit in with this other thing? So helping set up test plans, tracking what passes and fails, documenting blockers, that's all actually non-coding work. And of course, most importantly, is herding the cats, you know, making sure that there's notes being taken, making sure that decisions are actually landing in writing so we don't have the same debate next month. All of that is hugely important. They're not the most glamorous pieces of the puzzle that keeps the work moving forward, but without them, the groups will stall, meetings will get repetitive, and good ideas kind of just die in the noise. So if you're listening to this and saying, okay, well, maybe there's a place for me, but I still wouldn't know where to start, I have some recommendations. First off, go ahead and read the charter of the group you're interested in and just skim two or three of the most recent issues that were out there. That will give you a sense of the scope and what people are actually working on and who's working on it, because they'd probably be more than happy to sit down and chat with you about this. Introduce yourself on the mailing list. A simple message like, hi, I'm a product manager at XYZ company and I'm interested in helping in with use cases or meeting notes. People's eyes will just light up. You know, volunteer once to scribe a meeting or write a summary or draft a use case document. That's hugely helpful. You'll learn a lot and it does help the work. Go ahead and ask the chairs, what's one thing I could do this week or this month that would help unblock the work going on? And finally, you know, if you don't understand how consensus is done, actually look for consensus calls, either in the group you're interested in or in other group. Listen to how the chair is phrasing the questions and recording outcomes, because you're going to start to see patterns in how good chairs are driving consensus to get the work done. These are actually pretty small steps. Hopefully they will build your confidence and give you a foundation in the skills that chairs need, listening, documenting, and helping group make decisions. Now, maybe you're a manager. Okay. If you lead a team, here's what I want you to take away. Please do not assume that only your senior engineers belong in standards groups. You should be sending your product managers, your solution architects, your analysts, your technical writers who know how to make Please send your technical writers who know how to make decisions and make documentation accessible. And don't just send them in and say, bonne chance, good luck with that. Let us know how it goes in your trip report. Give them specific assignments to write a use case doc, to clean up issues, or to track interoperability progress. Measure their income, their impact and the outcomes that matter. You know, the fact that we're having fewer rehashed meetings, that we actually close issues and pull requests to say, yep, we've solved that particular issue, moving on to the next one. That's how you build institutional knowledge in your organization while helping out the group itself. So I'm going to call out a few traps that even experienced chairs and contributors fall into. The first one is wearing your company hat a little too heavily. I mean, remember, your job when you're participating in a working group is to help move the group's work forward, not just your organization's agenda. There's always a bigger picture involved when you're participating in standards. Second, and this is an interesting one, you know, turning your meetings into tutorials. I mean, going into deep dives are valuable, but they kind of belong in separate documents or issues, not in the main agenda of your conversation where they just eat the clock and you don't get to the items you need to discuss. Third, and a really difficult one to work around, is letting the loudest voice set direction. That's not consensus. Consensus is not unanimity. It's yes, we've got broad agreement and all of the concerns have been heard and documented, but it doesn't mean you're going to necessarily say, and everyone is correct and we're going to get it all in there, because that's just not how things can happen. And last but not least, in terms of common traps, treating silence as consent. It usually isn't. I mean, if it's actual people just aren't chiming up, then you don't have enough energy in the room to determine whether there's consensus or not. Ask for explicit signals. Can you live with this proposal? One tool that helps me avoid these traps is just having a simple checklist, posting the agenda in advance, linking to pre-reads, assigning a scribe and timekeeper. Depending on the meeting, the organization itself may give you that checklist, or if it's, you know, more a weekly meeting, then that's just something I have as a standing items in the agenda itself. It's all basic stuff, but it works pretty well. So why all of this matters, of course, is that standards work touches every part of the digital identity world: federation, digital credentials, browsers, payments. The decisions made in these groups shape the products and policies that your team will have to live with for years. But this process is not self-sustaining. If only engineers and spec authors show up, then very important perspectives get lost, and that hurts interoperability, it hurts usability, it makes adoption harder than it needs to be. You do not need to be the smartest engineer in the room to contribute. You need to be willing to listen, to ask questions, and to help the group get to a decision it can live with. So if you thought that, okay, standards development isn't for me, I really want to challenge you on that. Show up once, scribe a meeting, draft a use case document, or if you lead a team, send someone in who can listen, write, and just help keep things moving, because those are the skills that actually keep standards work healthy. So think about it. What's one non-coding skill that you personally could bring into a working group in the next month? Think about it. And if you're ready to step in, reach out to a chair. We're always happy to have more people helping the process run smoothly. And with that, thank you for listening to the Digital Identity Digest. If you want a link to anything I've talked about, they're always in the written blog, and I hope you enjoy it. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.